everybody, welcome in. Thank you for tuning in to the fourth episode of On the Draw. I'm Mythic Fishbomb here with Phoenix Forge X. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing well.
And who have you brought with us today?
I think we got Endormy back with us. Is he around here somewhere?
Oh, I think he just left.
Oh, okay. Well, who's this then?
I'm just his brother.
The Crusher of Dreams.
Yeah.
Dorimi. So we got Dorimi here with us, and Phoenix Forge. So we're going to go over a few things. Not a whole lot to talk about this week. It's been kind of a slow week in the world of Hex. But we do have the Hex TCG Pro Invitational coming up next week. There was the ending of the VIP program, and there's a new champion spoiled in the Friday update this week, as well as a few more spoilers we're going to go over from the previous week. So we're going to lead off with the Hex TCG Pro Invitational. We have, of the Hex X, there's four of the seven of us in there, so pretty solid showing for us in there. I think we're all in different pods. How's that work? Are we all in the same pod, or what's going on with that one?
I think actually we have two people in one pod, two people in another pod, right? It's Karn and Mantic, I believe, are in the same pod, and then Havoc and Endormy are in the same pod? I think that's correct. I might be wrong. I might be totally wrong.
Yeah, I'm not on Havoc. I'm with Yotam, but not with Havoc.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, maybe a few people we test with the Dragonborns.
Yes.
Dragonborns? I think they are called now Strife, in honor of...
Oh, they're called Strife. That's cool. That's a very cool name. Yeah, in honor of our good buddy Strife. So we got a few members from them in there as well. So, do you want to break down the rules for us? I mean, don't really know how it works. And Norman, you're in. Do you know the rules and all that? Want to break it down?
Yeah, it's basically set one with reserves, and it's going to be similar to the World Cup, or the same thing of the World Cup. Is run robin. A couple of groups run robin. The two best of each group advance, and there's an elimination. Top 16, I think it is. Or maybe it's a little bit more because there's not exactly 32 people.
How many people is there? Is there like more than 32 or less than 32? Actually, more, right?
I think it does. Yeah, there's a couple more of 32 because there was some people that may have not been able to make it, so Tata just decided to put all the 9 points guys in case people just couldn't show up or something like that. I think we are like 35 total.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. I like the idea of the pod deal. We did it for the tournament of streamers. I believe it's the same concept as that, right? We had the pods and, you know, top two from each pod advanced into a top eight type deal. And it's a really cool format, and I'm really interested to see how it works out. There's a lot of really good players in there, since they all, you know, were top 32 and above from the entire challenge series to the points. So I'm really interested to see how it works out. We got a few really, really big names in there with Neo and obviously Havoc and Karn and all those guys in there. Endormy is not included in that because he's not a big name in my book. But we got a lot of really cool people in there, so I'm really intrigued to see how it turns out. Do you guys think that the meta is going to be any different, or do you think it's going to be like Blood Diamond and Gorpheus are running Supreme in this one, or do you think maybe the Midnight Shepherd deck may make an appearance in there and see if that can shake things up a little bit?
I think that we're going to see, you know, probably half the field doing what we've seen over the last few months. The Gorpheus decks are obviously good, so there's going to be quite a few of those. I think, you know, blood-based control decks are going to be around. But I do think we're going to see, you know, some people are going to try and go out of the box. We could see, you know, a couple of Midnight Shepherd decks. We could see some Mono Sapphire decks, which really isn't out of the box per se, but it's really not that popular. So to throw a wrench in other people's plans, you could just switch it up and try something completely different. And there being so many good people playing that have testing groups full of other good players, we could see something that we've never seen before. I mean, you know, it could be a completely new brew that comes out and catches everybody by surprise. And I think that's probably... I mean, if I was in the tournament, which I'm not, sadly, because I'm terrible, but that's besides the point, I think that could be a really good strategy for some people. Just, you know, play something off the wall, try and catch people off guard, and, you know, I mean, see how it goes.
I mean, if you look at, like, what Peace Tinker did in the Open Series, well, not the Open Series, he did it in the Challenge Series first, but came into it with, like, a Wild Ruby Gorfice deck. We all expect Ruby Sapphire Gorfice deck, so we're all like, okay, well, so we know how to play around Stormcall, we know how to play around all these things. We don't think of Gash Troll. So you come in there with something a little different, and you could not necessarily steal a tournament, because obviously his deck's really good, he's a very good player, but, like, you can catch people off guard, like Phoenix was saying, and have a different approach to things, so people aren't necessarily prepared for your deck. And I know Zubrin was saying that he doesn't feel like we talked to him on the Open Series stream, and he was saying he doesn't feel like we've fully explored the depths of set one. So I'd be curious to see if his group comes out with something different, since he, you know, maybe not necessarily hinted at, you know, having something up his sleeve with that. But I think there are definitely places that we can go that maybe people haven't tried because they're just too stuck in the ways of Blood Diamond is the best, or Gorfice is the deck to beat, or what have you. I think we could definitely find something, maybe something shocking come at us and just take the whole thing by storm. So it should be definitely intriguing. I'm going to be looking forward to watching some streams and stuff of people doing it. Yeah, so I guess that's all they have to say about that one. So, we have, a news that came out today. We have two news that came out today, but the first one that came out today was the ending of the VIP program. To me, not a huge deal. I mean, it's nice to get, you know, to support Hex by paying $4 a month, and, you know, you get some packs and redemption for it, and they said that, I think they were going to have the VIP tournaments, if I remember correctly. But now they're canceling it because there was apparently a problem with people getting multiple accounts and buying multiple VIPs and selling the packs back to make, like, a few cents in profit, and they didn't want people to exploit the potential for exploits to be in the game, so they wanted to cancel the program. I believe that we're going to be getting some amount of redemption back for that, like, with the people who have the VIP program in their Kickstarters or whatnot and haven't redeemed it will get some amount of compensation with packs or tournament entry fees and stuff like that. But it's sad to see it go, because, again, it's a nice way to support Hex as well as, you know, get something in return with the cheaper packs. But I do think that the ending of this will, not necessarily for set one, but probably for future sets, help out the auction house prices of packs. If you think about it now, the reason packs are so low is because you're like, well, I can get the VIP program, I'm going to get a dollar pack, so I can sell my packs for like $1.30, so I make some profit, and, you know, I'm underselling the packs bought from the store, so people are going to buy from me instead of them. Whereas now, maybe the packs would be like $1.80 as opposed to $1.30, which they are now. So I think that's kind of good for us in that we can sell our packs back to make some money, as opposed to now you're kind of breaking even when you sell your packs back when you win a tournament. What do you guys think about that?
Alright, well, I'm thinking Derby died over there or something. But anyway.
Alright.
You know, the VIP program was a good idea. I think they need to take another look at it. Like, I don't think this is the end of anything, something like this for the future of Hex. I think they need to reevaluate how to do it correctly. Obviously, gold farmers and such is a huge thing in video gaming across the board. So they don't want anybody to be able to exploit these kind of things. But maybe they can take another look at it, come at it from a different angle, and maybe, you know, give benefits to people who are really into supporting Hex and giving back to the game. Maybe with, you know, like the tournament idea was good. Maybe drop the price of it, make it, you know, a few dollars a month. Don't give packs, but give entries to tournaments and things like that. That way there's not really an exploit that can happen from it. So I think there definitely is room for a program like that. I just think they may not have expected people to be exploiting the whole free pack thing. Or not free, but, you know, the weekly packs. So we'll see what they come up with in the future. And hopefully, you know, there's something there for some of the more serious people to get into different tournaments as such.
One of the things that they could have done is every month, instead of having the IAP program, have a tournament of the month or kind of discount. Like, for example, this month is sealed month, and the sealed tournaments are going to be a little bit cheaper because we want to promote sealed this month or maybe these 2 weeks. And the next 2 weeks is constructed tournaments, and the entry fee is 100 plat less. Or if we, right now, because there's only one set, it's not the best, but it could also have been in, like, every couple of months, some old packs, if they are not out of rotation, maybe a little bit cheaper. I mean, we're not talking about a half price, but maybe, I don't know, 10 or 20% discount.
Well, they can, in the future, obviously they can't do this now, but if you think about, like, what, I don't want to compare the two, obviously, but what Magic Online does is they have, like, every now and then they have these old sets come back to be draftable. So, like, they'll have, like, you know, Ravnica block drafts this month or whatever. So, like, maybe as Hex grows and gets more sets, they can do something like that where, like, your VIP can give you packs for set one, and you can do drafts for set one this month or, you know, whatever. Something like that. Another thing that Krohn said was to do non-tradable, like, sleeves and alternate art cards that are exclusive to VIP, so they can't sell them. But you get something back for supporting Hex each month. So that could be something cool they can do as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like that idea. Make it something that would appeal to the collectors or vanity items, things like that, as opposed to something that has monetary value on the auction house and in the community as a whole. That way, you know, they're still making money. People are still getting something special for supporting them in this program that they're doing. Without much risk to Hex at all. So that might be something definitely to look at.
I mean, one of the issues with that is that they said that they're not going to sell anything else but packs. So selling something that is not packs, or, well, if they sell something like alternate art cards or something like that, it could potentially mess a little bit with the economy, which is what they don't want to do. Especially if, for example, if they do once a month an alternate art card of the month, and you can buy it for whatever price. That could potentially mess the economy if they have a really good rare that's, for example, $10 on the auction house, and because it's that month, it's just going to be $1. So it will completely destroy the price of that card. So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, they just need to make whatever they do for special programs like that non-tradable items, and then, you know, make it bound to your account so it never leaves your collection. And, you know, the people who want those kind of things will take advantage of it, and the people that, you know, don't really care about that can spend their plan on other things. So, you know, could work.
Well, I mean, they can do it in a way where it's not necessarily doing rares or legendaries that are worth a good amount of money on their own. You could do, like, an alternate art Solitary Exile this month. You know, staple cards that are good and that people want to have and, you know, would like having the alternate art swag too. Like, I don't know, I think that would be a fine one to do, like, you know, alternate art burn this week, or alternate art, you know, nature rains, like staples and stuff like that that people are going to play, and like having the alternate arts for, because people like to deck their deck out, they like to have these pimp decks going on, so they can have, like, streamers want to have these really, you know, elaborate and cool looking things on their stream, so they look like they're, you know,
awesome. Gotta have that bling, man, gotta have that bling.
So crazy idea here, so what do you want, really? Is to have to pay some amount of money to get X amount of entry fees to tournaments, and in those special tournaments, they, as part of the price, they have alternate art cards every month, different alternate art every month. If you win or get like first or second place,
I don't like that idea because I wouldn't win the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like I was thinking that too, but like you could, if it were to do that way. I think that one of the better ways to do it would be, like, if you win, you get this rare, like, an alternate art, like, I don't know, Menacing Grog, we'll go with.
So when it's not, like, you can't mess with the dragon dog. Come on,
then,
dude.
Like, I mean, it would become, like, a dog dragon instead of a dragon dog. Maybe they switch it around.
You know that bird is the word, right?
Bird is definitely the word. They could go with having, you know, second, third, fourth get this alternate art of an uncommon, and then everyone else gets an alternate, entering, you get an alternate art of this common. So the winner gets all the stuff, second place gets all the uncommon.
That's way too much. That's way too much stuff to collect.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's not a trade.
And they're going to have to hire a lot more artists.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm trying to think of a way we can do something like that, that, again, rewards us for supporting Hex going in the future, as well as, you know, gives us something sweet to, you know, hold on to and collect for all people who like to collect things.
I mean, in the Wits tournament prize, you can also give, like, for example, it's the first and second place are guaranteed, but there's also additional copies that are raffled between all the participants. That's fine. And you still get the tournament fees in a bulk, which I think it's fine.
Well, just something for them to think about. If they want to steal it, you know, no royalties sent my way. It's fine. You can just have it. So the next one we got here was from the Friday update. Corey, I think they just put that like a little bit before we came even on recording here. And in that, they went over a little bit of the Gen Con stuff, so basically the same as last week, but they did give us a little bit of a gem here for set two, which is a new champion spoiled. We've seen a few champions like spoken about in the forums and such, but nothing really, nothing yet of solid substance. Sorry, doing something and chat and blew my mind. we haven't gotten an actual spoiler or anything confirmed from Cryptozoic, and now we have this new champion here called Warmaster Fuzuko. Fuzuko? I'm not sure. It's supposed to be like samurai, but also bunny. So it's blowing my mind a little bit. But it's a champion, obviously. One thing I've always wondered about the champions is they show it as a card here. A zero cost, zero power, 20 toughness. I'm wondering if in the future they're going to go with something like getting it power and lowering the toughness of certain ones to get better effects, and, like, I mean, because there's the only time you ever see it as a card when they show it like this.
Yeah, but that's basically PvE.
So you think it's going to be a PvE thing? They're going to have some champions that do that stuff?
Yeah, that you start with, for example, the Warrior may start with 5 additional health if you go with that, and the, I don't know, and the Priest may just go with 80 life to start because he is on, he's really weak, whatever.
Fair enough. Alright. So I was always wondering about it, never actually said aloud until now. But this champion, though, it has the basic action of 5 with a double wild threshold. Troops you control get permanent +1/+1. 5 is a little more than you really want for this kind of effect. Like, you want it to be a little cheaper because you want to have, like, you know, you want to do it as aggressively as possible. But if you think about it in the fact that it's much better than Palamedes, it actually looks way better. I do like the effect because it's an anthem effect, which I always want for my little weenie decks. And it being 5 isn't too atrocious considering we have all these new charges and stuff, the charge powers and all that stuff, the crackles and the new dual resources give us charges off that. We have the crackling vortex, the resource that gives double charges. So you have some ways to accelerate the charges a little bit, which makes it so it could become faster. But I do, again, love the effect of the +1/+1 to all your troops.
All I want to say is everybody needs to rewind and look at, like, minute 17 and around 40 seconds, and you'll hear something funny that Mythic says. But anyways, this guy is good. I don't know if he exactly fits into the current style of Shinhir decks correctly, because I love the effect, the anthem effect. That's great. But would you rather have this guy, or would you rather have Monica Shin? And I understand that set 2 has more Battle Hopper producing cards and things, but the Monica Shin's pretty good in a Shinhir deck as a whole anyways, especially if you're playing, you know, Rituals of the Spring Litter and things of that nature. So I don't know if he's just going to fit into more of a green aggro shell, or if you're just going to want to slap him into a Shinhir deck. But it does open up the space where you could use this specific Shinhir champion in other styles of decks. So I like that. It's nice to see an anthem effect on something like this, because why not give +1/+1 to everything that you have? That's better than giving +1/+1 to one thing that you have any day of the week. So I'm excited. This obviously shows that more champions are coming in, and they're coming in quicker than I originally expected, so nothing bad here.
Yeah, so a couple of things. The first one is that this confirms that set 2 will have champions, which is something we did not had confirmed before this one, because they said that they may just push the champions to set 3. So I think this basically confirms the champions going to be on set 2. Also, I don't know why you didn't talk about this at all, but it's bugging the hell out of me that there are 3 swords in the picture, but he only has 2 hands, so I have no idea why the third sword is there.
his ears that carry the sword.
I think that sword's just stuck in the ground.
It doesn't make sense to me.
He slayed somebody, used his sword to be like, yo, you're dead now. Got your sword in the ground.
Hey, alright, so if he actually wields his swords with his ears, I'm using him in every deck. Because that's baller.
You've never done it before?
I've tried. It caused some stitches, but I've tried.
Katana helicopter bunny. Okay.
There you go.
That's a better name than Warmaster Fuzuko. Can't pronounce that for anything.
It's Fuzuko, man. Come on.
I don't know. That doesn't look like Fuzuko to me. It sounds like I prefer helicopter blade bunny.
So Mythic was super excited when he saw the champion. And for some reason, he's saying that he's not that excited anymore. I think he's okay. I'm not super excited. With maybe 5 is a lot. For set 1, with all these set 1 cards, it'll be a little bit slow. I mean, to be fair, the champions we have on set 1, there are some colossal and some champions that are super, super mediocre. So, on the argument that he's better than Palamedes, is... Yeah, okay, so he's better than average, or he's better than mediocre. So I guess I can get behind that. He is really good on draft. Unlimited, he's going to be really, really good. On constructed, he may be a little bit too slow. The effect is really good if you have a decent board, but you may not have a decent board. Especially on turn 5, if he's post-extinction or similar. So, I don't know. He may be good, but I think the effect to be really, really, really good, and to push him, he should be 4 charges or the thing is that the permanent is not super relevant if you are an aggressive deck, so I would have preferred to see him as a 3 charges +1/+1 till the end of the turn, because aggro really doesn't care if it's permanent or not. So making it permanent and upping the cost, it just makes him a little bit clunky. The permanent effect is nice, but it doesn't fit the aggro theme as much as we want, and we have been asking for a wild aggressive champion, but that is better than Kushimoto for the wild diamond deck that we want to brew with. But and this may be it, but it's a little bit slow to me for my taste.
I think that the permanent +1/+1 could come into play with recurring troops like Boss Moss and the vampire bunny? Doesn't he come back into play again?
Yeah.
The zombie bunny.
Yeah,
what's his name?
I know what Mythic's name is thinking.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that.
Well, I apologize because we're doing a terrible time at our job, because we should know that. But it could have relevance with reoccurring troops coming back into play. So it's not... I don't think it's horrible. I do agree with Endormy that it's a little slow, especially when we've seen that in set 1 right now, you kind of want to go for a turn 4 kill. And if, granted, with the new charge system, or what are we calling that? Charge fall?
Well, it's not officially named, but yeah.
That's what it's charge fall. Yep.
Well, with all the charges, the charge gaining abilities in set 2, I mean, it's feasible to drop this on a turn 3. It doesn't seem like it would be that big of a deal to be able to get this off turn 3. But I also do agree that he's going to be great and limited, because how many times do you have, you know, 5 or 6 troops on board and you're staring at your opponent that has 5 or 6 troops on board and you can't get anything across because they have, you know, 1 more toughness than you have power across the whole field. So it could be very, very relevant and limited as well.
The Blood Bunny is called Minion of Yuzukin, so to be fair, his name is not very easily rememberable, because Yuzukin, I always think of Yakuza, and I always think he's a Japanese bunny then, and that doesn't make a lot of sense. But the reason that Indomie was saying I was so excited about it is because I thought it was 3 costs. I skipped right past the cost, figuring this is the one that they... Because there was some spoiling from the forums. I'm not going to go into it, so I don't know. Like, it's not... Obviously, it's not true at this point, because this one's different than the one they spoiled. But the spoiled one was 3 costs and gets until end of turn. So this one be... I thought that's what this was whenever I read it. So I thought it was 3 costs and gets permanent. I was like, that's awesome. But it's 5 costs and gets permanent. It's a little less exciting. I still love it. The only thing that comes to mind is that the deck I'd want to be playing it in currently would be Wild Diamond, but I think I'd almost rather have Dimid in that deck with your 4/4s and your 5/5s for cheaper, and then gaining the life is a pretty big tempo swing in the aggro matchups. So I do think that I'd probably rather play Dimid in that deck. At least that we've seen so far. Maybe we'll see something better than Dimid in the future champions we see here, but I think I'd prefer to play Dimid over this guy. Though I do like this guy in that Wild Blood deck that I was also brewing with a little bit, with making your zombies into 3/3s and making your minion of Yakuza into a 2/2 that then dies in tunnels and all that stuff. So I do think he has the potential in that deck, but and again, in limited, he's pretty baller. But yeah, I originally thought it was 3 cost is what it came down to.
I mean, the thing is that even though if you can get it on turn 3, that means you have played not creatures, because there are not creatures that give you charge other than Charbot, I believe. I may be wrong because I don't have the full set in my mind. So the only things that give you charges are the resources, the double resource and the crackling set or cycle. But if you are crackling, you are not playing creatures, and you want to be playing creatures with this guy. So even though you can play it on turn 3, if you get a couple of cracklings go, you may just have one or two creatures, which is okay. It's not, but I think you just want to do it better, to get better of it. I mean, he's great for activated Battle Hoppers, though. You want to play with the Wild Bunny deck on casual? He's great for that.
Well, going on to that Wild Blood deck that we were talking about a little bit, we got a spoiler today also from Corey on Twitter. It's a 2-cost, 1-blood threshold for a 1/2 called Gortazuma High Cleric. It's a troop orc high cleric. It has rage 1, and it says, Gortazuma refuses to block as death by blocking is not fit for a high cleric of Cogtopay. Cogtopal? Cogtopal. Whatever, man. While an opposing champion has 10 or less health, Gortazuma is invincible. The ability to become invincible seems pretty solid. The not blocking, I don't like, because right now, if you think about the current meta with Gorefeast, if you're not blocking, a lot of times you're dying. So not being able to block, I don't like at all, because if you get him late game, like turn 2 is probably fine. You get him to be a 2/2, keep bashing, and you know, whatever. He can actually become pretty solid as a nice beater, and then can become invincible. But he dies to almost everything because he's a 2 toughness, so he dies to just trading with a lot of things. And also, again, being just not being able to block, I just hate it. I like the minion because he comes back from the dead a lot, and like, you know, can fight that way, but this guy not being able to block at all, just not what I'm digging.
So yeah, so let's start. So the first thing is that he's a unique, and he's a high cleric of Cogtopal. So now that means we already know this, the second cleric of Cogtopal, being the first one being Taltaika, and I think they are limited spots in that cycle, in that circle. So it's a lore character, which is kind of nice to discover more of the lore. I don't like this guy much. One of the things that sprung a little bit of discussion is how he can block close is describing this card. If they say Gortazuma High Cleric can block, says Gortazuma refuses to block as death by blocking is not fit for a High Cleric of Cogtopal. And my opinion is that it's fine if it's always clear or really clear, and it's only with simple mechanics, and they don't overuse it. If they do one card a set or something like that, it's fine. Like for example, set 1 we have the Mushwoki, which is fine, but they don't want to overuse that. So if they would do,
well, we actually had it on 2 cards in set 1. We had it on Reginald as well. It destroys you, isn't necessarily.
I don't want to get into the templates. So I'll just go with that. Mushwoki is the only one that it says is different.
Well, I think that it's fine in the fact that it's on a unique troop. Like, if they're going to limit it to only unique troops having those specific flavor texts on them, I think that's fine, because it's a unique troop. There's a story behind it. It should, you know, should have a little something extra to it. But I agree that they should not overuse this because it could cause some confusion, especially for new players. The card as a whole, when I first saw it, I was like, eh, it's not that great. And then I started thinking about it, and there's a couple of uses that could be really good for it, except for the fact that it's kind of conditional. I think that in a Blood Ruby deck, you could drop this. You could not drop it until later in the game where you know he's going to stay on the board from being invincible, and then use something like Lionel Flynn on him or Crown of the Primals on him. And then he's kind of a force to be reckoned with at that point, especially with Crown of the Primals. So I think there are some uses for him, but like I said, it's very situational, and we're going to see what people can brew with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a unique. I don't know why he's a 1-2 being a unique and an orc. I know he has rage, but I don't know. He screams to me like he wants to have a speed or being at least a 2-2. I think his body is not fit for a unique, and especially a high cleric of Cocktipple.
His body's not fit for high cleric.
No, but what I mean is...
That should be the flavor text.
Yeah, but what I mean is that... yeah, that could be the flavor text for sure. But yeah, his stats are not that great for a unique. I don't know why he is not a 2-2 or a 2-2 with the speed and rage 1. Also,
it's because he's a cleric, man.
Also, the second thing that I dislike a lot about this troop is that it seems that the Blood Orcs added effect they want to go with the effect of 10 or less life. But if you compare it with Embringer that says any champion, this one is only your opposing champion. So for that aggro deck that deals out of damage to himself, this second ability is not worth it on this guy because it's not going to activate when you are below 10 life. Also, invincible is okay, but it's not going to kill your opponent faster at all. I don't know. I would like to see something different. For example, if he cannot block, he could, for example, have been whenever he attacks, he's invincible, or only when he attacks without the 10 or less health. And if your opponent is still 10 or less health, he's unblockable or something like that. I think it fits better the theme that he's just randomly unblockable, randomly invincible. I don't think it fits the flavor of the card we can put.
Well, if you think of a really nice curve with this guy, would be like turn 1 Fang, turn 2 this guy, turn 3 Claw, turn 4 Gorpheus is pretty powerful. Like, that's almost certainly a GG right there if they can't answer that field.
You can put any other card for 1 to drop, 2 drop, 3 drop, and Gorpheus.
And
it's the same thing.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm just saying that, like, even if, like, they kill the Claw, they're still probably going to drop down to, like, at least 10. So he becomes invincible with a bunch of power to him, so that's actually pretty potent. I mean, I do agree with you that it should be whenever any player is under 10, because with this, with the orc decks, you want to be playing Claws and Fangs. Like, they're the two of the better troops you can have in the deck, and they deal damage to you. So him getting a buff off of them potentially dealing damage to you down to the point of you're at 10 life, I feel like would be beneficial for him. But again, because it doesn't, I don't think he has much potential.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is that it doesn't fit the theme of the deck, the theme of the card, because the card is a really aggressive orc that he preys on the weakness of their opponents and so on and so forth. So him being invincible is not really what he does. For example, he could be like whenever he attacks and he's blocked by a creature, that creature cannot block Gorgeous-Uma again or something like that, but he just kick them to the ground. Attack them or something like that. I don't think that the invincible fits the flavor of this card. And this card, when they go for replacing the normal text for something different, I think it should fit the design one. It should be a super flavorful card. And I think that the invincible doesn't fit at all the theme of this guy. But that's maybe just my opinion, and all the other guys disagree with me, but I don't see this guy being invisible. I feel that this guy wants to be aggressive and murderous, and I don't know. I don't see where the invisible comes from.
I wish he had like rage 2 and speed or something like that. Like, just something to make him like like, again, the flavor text of, like, my body's not fit for a high cleric would be just be perfect for him. Because he feels so, like, lackluster, honestly, to me.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there might be other cards in set two that make him way better than we think he is that just haven't been spoiled yet. So we'll just have to see. Time will tell. They can't make every card amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've been on a pretty long game of it.
No, yeah, but the thing is that what I'll say that, yeah, for sure they cannot make every card amazing, but when you change the text of the card to and put something different, like for example they got the full match rules to block, then that card needs to feel amazing and needs to feel different and has to be cohesive and in the design, and I don't think the Invincible fits the design with the, especially with the image or the art that they have it. He's basically slamming his axe and he's decapitating two guys. That doesn't feel invincible to me. That feels super aggressive and super power, and you see the car and he has one power and he's just decapitating two opponents with one axe swing. That doesn't feel invisible, or because invisible is a defensive keyword, if we can put it that way. It doesn't feel aggressive enough.
Maybe if he had, like, if your opponent's under 10 health, he has speed or something like that, like, maybe that would be to make him feel a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more flavorful. I don't know. Like, you're under 10 health, so he's going in for the kill with being speed. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that would make him, or maybe even Special Strike would be like, whatever. Like that.
Yeah, Unblockable, for example, Unblockable, because he goes for your opponent, yeah, and he strikes them when they are down. When they are down on health, he ignores every troop. He always attacks. Or, for example, it could be that when your opponent is at less of 10 health, this card can deal the attack damage to your opponent as he has not been blocked or something like that,
yeah,
because he goes for when your opponent is it's on the ground and he has the upper hand and the opportunity. For example, I think that will be super
like a finish him type effect.
Yeah,
but it's not. Yeah, that's what he prays on that guy. Or for example, he will also be like if he deals damage also to a troop. For example, a different thing, but when he deals damage to a troop and that troop has been dealt damage this turn, he automatically kills them because they are
gains lethal. You mean?
Yeah, not gains lethal. He automatically destroys them.
Oh, so they could die from dealing damage. They just die from blocking him.
Yeah, because he gets the opportunity to strike because they are weakened, and he just goes for the throat and automatically kills them or something like that. I think that's a lot of stuff that is super flavorful and so forth.
Yeah, like these cards that they, again, change the beginning text for, you kind of think that, like, there are ones that you want to have be pivotal to the story or have, like, a nice lore behind them. And this guy, like, while maybe he does have some nice sweet lore to him, his card doesn't really feel that powerful. And, like, they were saying at one of the Gen Con conferences with Aaron Squire, that they want people to, like, cosplay as these characters from Hex and all that stuff, and like if you want that to happen, they have to be like really sweet cards as well as sweet stories. So if this guy's a sweet story and his card's mediocre, at least in my mind, it's like stuff like that's not really going to happen. So I think if they're going to go ahead and make these cards like feel like they're supposed to mean something, that their cards should be.
Speaking of cosplay, I want to know anybody out there in the community that would like to see Mythic dress up as Mancubus for HexCon next year, you gotta hit us up on our Gmail account, because we've talked about that in the past, and I think that would be awesome. So let us know.
Well, when did we talk about that?
We discussed that when the card was first spoiled. We were joking about how you would cosplay as him.
That's way too far. That's not legally binding.
No, he decided. He said he was going to cosplay as a pony.
Okay. That's totally but, different.
Yeah. I mean, I was if I was going to be a Baneslayer pony, it's fine. I can probably be a Baneslayer pony. I don't want to be mounted by it. But let's go on to the next card before this gets way out of control. We got Grunt of the Infinite. This is a card I really enjoy. It's a 6-cost double blood threshold for a 5/5. Troop doesn't say what kind. I looks like goblin, I guess.
Yeah, it's got to be a goblin.
It's
it says at the start of your turn, each other troop gets -1/-1. Whenever another troop dies, Grunt of the Infinite gets +1/+1. This card to me screams like ramp deck. You ramp into this guy, you play him out, and he just takes over the game against the aggro decks. I feel like if you can get this guy out of turn 4, you could probably just start taking over the game against aggro decks.
I think you have your radar completely off. Yeah. I don't think he fits around the back.
I personally think he fits. I think he fits perfectly into a control deck. I think he's great in a control deck. You know, you slam him late in the game, you slowly tick down the other opponents, and while you're using removal spells on the opposing enemy's troops, he goes ahead and pumps up as well.
I mean, if you're playing a blood deck at all, you're playing removal spells, right? And if you're ramping into him turn 4, as opposed to playing him at turn 6, that's 2 turns earlier to kill, like, the... it's the same turn they're playing their Royal Falconers, and you're killing their entire
Falcon. But then you're also doing detriment to your own troops with him. Because it's not just opposing troops.
This is your troops. This is your troops at this point. You just play it out, that's it. You ramp into him and just be like, okay, my Hallenberg died. He was so young, I know, but it's fine.
So, yeah, I mean, the main issue with this guy will be super, 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 super good. If it's instead of the start of your turn, it will be at the end of your turn. He will be so, 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 so good.
Because the turn you're playing, you can just sweep their field and have a gigantic
guy. Yeah, you start the thing. And he's a little bit slow. That'd be fair, because if it's at the start of your turn, he's a little bit slow. But the effect is really cool and really powerful. I think that maybe he's a little bit slow, as I said, but I do like him. I think he's super, super cool effect. And it can completely put the pressure or close the door to aggressive strategies, especially as the minus one every turn can be brutal.
It's like a zombie play that's affecting the field as opposed to the deck.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to complain about this guy though is clearly he's juggling here in this picture, and he has chains attaching them with electricity, so it's clearly cheating, and I want to call shot on his skills.
I don't think he's juggling.
He's definitely juggling. Have you ever seen juggling?
No. I'll explain you what he's doing. He has one ball in his hand, another ball in his hand.
Like we're going.
And then between the ears, he has a static ray that makes the other one float.
Sounds a lot like juggling. I'm just saying he's definitely a cheater. If you challenge him to juggle off, you're going to...
I think he's actually casting a spell, but that's just me.
I think it's the souls of their... I feel it's the souls of the opponent, the troops that that he kills, that they empower him. And every time the troop dies, he gets another orb.
I'd like to also add...
Get behind that more than casting a spell. I still think it's juggling, but we'll go into the next card.
Hold on.
One second.
Just like we're into that.
Also, I do think that the flavor cast of these guys will be, it was merely a setback, but that's just me.
Well, the flavor text isn't on there yet. Yeah. It's there.
Yeah. But yeah, but you meeting and Phoenix will not get the reference, but maybe someone in the podcast does. So yeah, that should be the flavor text.
Still not as good as Bone Warrior though.
I vote that Mythic's ramp deck into this guy should be called Grunt Puppy Slayer. Because he's going to be killing a lot of Howling Braves with it.
Hey, man. Sometimes your Howling Braves have to die so your grunts can get bigger. That's,
That makes sense.
The greater good.
It's for the cost.
I don't think Peter would like that, but...
Look, man, I love dogs, but, he was a brave Howler, He was brave for a while, and then he died.
There you go.
Happens. Happens to the best of us. Speaking of the best of us, this next card is, a very attractive lady. One cost with five.
Just say the real thing. It's Pocahontas.
It's Pocahontas. All right, it's Pocahontas.
I think it's Shakira.
She's painting with the color of the wind.
It's not Shakira. It's Pocahontas. Yeah, she's painting with the color of the wind.
There you go. I think John Smith is somewhere in the back there somewhere. But we got one cost with five diamond threshold for a card called Noble Heart. The quick action target troop gets permanent invincible. This card has potential. The 5 thresholds
are
a little bit much.
Have you caught the threshold? Because that's a lot of thresholds.
It's a lot of thresholds, but it's also a very powerful effect. And it is something you can do as like a counter magic late in the game if you're playing like a mono diamond deck, which we've played mono diamond decks before, and they've actually been kind of sweet. Like a mono diamond like with a bunch of artifacts and all this kind of stuff. And you just make your Eternal Guardian invincible and go beat it.
Gatebol is not a spell skill, though.
Nope.
Yeah, but
Solitary Exile.
It can't get extinctioned. Yeah, Solitary Exile is a new deck, dude.
No, I know.
Well, what kind of diamond are you playing without Solitary Exile? But you're playing it wrong.
No, what I'm saying is I don't think the keyword invincible as a keyword is as potent as you would generally assume that it is, just because there's going to be a lot of void effects in future sets. So I'm not saying that it's not a potent effect. I'm saying that there's obviously things that can still take care of the card that you put this on.
I'm just saying,
I'm
going
to start saying Persecute is a card that's probably on set 2, and it says I don't care about invincible too much, especially for little troops.
I really don't think Persecute's in set 2. They already spoiled the Crackling thing. The Crackle is -2/-2, and it'll cost more. I think they just replaced Persecute with the Crackle.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming back up.
All the -- effects are really, really good to face invincible.
Hey,
I think the card is, unless you want to combo and protect one specific creature, I'm not super thrilled about it.
I mean, Invincible Drew sounds pretty sweet to me.
It does. Sounds pretty good. I was thinking more of like a Spearing or something like that.
Invincible Baneslayer Pony.
That seems like a waste.
But you get to see his beauty for so long.
Yeah, I mean, for example, if you have a card like for example, Mini was saying, not Baneslayer Pony, but a similar something like this, for example, 5/5 flying vigilance, whatever. All the keywords on the card, but it's lacking invincible. Then you put it invincible, and it's basically solid because you attack in 5 life. It's going to become the Abyss, killing one troop every turn. So then, yeah, you want to protect the threat because it's really, really good. But I don't think that unless you have those kind of troops, invincible is not as it's good, but it's sometimes just win more, and when you don't need it. So I don't think it's just for. So I think it's more for protecting a very, very specific troop, for example, you want to combo, or similar.
Yeah.
Rufus,
just 5 threshold is a lot.
Is she doing the Macarena?
She might be.
I see the hands facing down.
I think she's washing her hands because those birds pooped on her.
Mm.
Is that her head? I mean, it's not the, the Macarena is not like that.
You would know.
We all know Mythic can't dance.
I would, yeah. Though, I do think the selling point of this card, despite what it says, I can say nothing at all. This chick is very attractive. Let's just cut right to the chase.
I knew you were going to
I mean,
her boobs.
I wasn't going that far. I was just talking about the birds and the hair. It's just very...
Yeah, and the pendant and so forth.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's beautiful art. I kind of want to marry her, and it's not a huge deal.
I think I hear Mythic's wife on the bug.
Yeah, he's getting right beat over the head right now with something.
But yeah, I mean, it's not really a very eventful week. They got the 128 mans back, and there's a... But they've been working, but they haven't been firing off as much as they'd like to be. Steel's been firing off a lot more than Constructed, which is actually surprising to me. So that's pretty cool. Seeing Steel fire off is always sweet. So a favorite of a lot of people's formats, so... That's a cool one.
I'll play Sealed right now as long as nobody drops Mystic Spiritwalker on the board. So we're all good.
One thing I want to mention, though, this is probably going to come out like as the tournament's happening, but Saturday, which is apparently today, is they're doing a Infinite Person tournament, we'll go with? Does that seem fair
infinite
to call it?
Infinite Person.
That? Whoever wants to join,
no limit tournament, maybe. Just as a suggestion, and I'm not the English speaker.
It's sponsored by Grant.
I mean, Infinite Person's fun. But yeah.
When people say Infinite Person, that's a way to talk about large people.
No, that's not.
No, it isn't.
Well, here in Spain, yeah, it's like that. So.
Okay. Well,
is that like a your mama so fat joke in Spain or something?
Your mama's so infinite.
No, but when people say that, yeah, he's like.
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to say is that they're doing a free tournament, which is probably today when this is coming out, and anyone can enter. And usually, you want to enter earlier. Like it starts at around 3 o'clock.
You don't want to enter. It's no limit. You can enter before it starts.
The problem was last time, and it didn't work out so well. There was a lot of crashes and stuff. So the earlier you enter, the better, just for your own being of into the tournament. Hopefully it does fire off. The last one had a little bit of bugs, and that's the point of this is to stress test, so there's a good possibility it doesn't work, but if it does work, I think that does spell good things for potential of having, like, the Challenge Series events or the Open Series events in the game. Not soon, per se, because that still probably takes some coding to get it so you can open your own tournaments and such, but I do think it shows potential for getting those in at some point in the near future to maybe possibly.
It's a lot of variables, but it can happen.
I mean, obviously they're doing a lot of things, so I'm not trying to, like, put them down for not having them in there yet, because obviously it's a lot of work, but it is exciting to see them trying to do stuff like this, because it does, to me at least, speak that they're trying to get those kind of things into the game, like the league-type events and the guild-only tournaments and stuff like that, where it's getting more than maybe 128 people in there, so they want to have the availability to get more than 128 people in a tournament at one time. So, it's cool to see. Hopefully it works out for them this time. It didn't work out so well last time, but again, hopefully this one's the key to all the hex good.
I am all for progress, so bring them on.
But Throwers has a price.
An infinite price. Grunt of the Infinite, killing Helen Braves.
Is that another quote that we're supposed to recognize?
No, it's not a quote that we have to recognize, but... Okay. But Mythicals chained with something good, but so it's okay.
Okay. Well, again, not really a whole lot to talk about this week, so sorry if it's a little bit shorter than usual. But that's what we got. that's the week of Hex. So thanks for tuning in to Honor the Draw. Let us know what you liked about the... we tried to switch it up with having me host it this week, because Phoenix just sucks, let's be honest. He's just not very good.
I'm going to go hurt myself now.
just let us know what you guys thought about it. Give comments on iTunes and in the forums on Hextech TV. Yes, I want to thank you guys for being here with us. As always, Phoenix Forge being awesome, and Indormy always being our pinch hitter, since, you know, he's always around and never sleeps and is completely infinite, apparently.
Indormy's a vampire, I think.
Is that the fact?
I said you were eating up there, so I'm going to go with that one, yeah. Yeah, it was.
All right, guys. Well, thank you from myself, Phoenix Forge. Once again, this is always fun, so we'll have another one for you soon.
See you next week, guys.